Love God, love neighbor. This is the basis for all of our teaching. We can mostly see it, too, if we start looking when we read those first five books of our sacred scripture, those written in Hebrew. We can see it when we read the Psalms and the prophets. We see it. And in those accounts in Greek that reveal truth in the life and work of Jesus, we see it there too. Unlocking the scriptures like a proverbial key, this simple law of faith and order: love God, love neighbor. Everything else comes from that. In the account of the story, which we call Mark's, one of the other synoptics, the question is asked of Jesus by a scribe. And the scribe commends Jesus' response, right? He hears Jesus say the same thing, this: love God, love your neighbor. And says back the equivalent of, I definitely see it. I think you're right. We receive this teaching at the end of this barrage of questions and tricks and traps by the leaders of the faith, right? Jesus is questioned by the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the scribes and everybody, and they have all these attempts to trick him, to get Jesus to discredit himself or to blaspheme, tricks that try to get Jesus to say the wrong thing, tricks to bring him down a peg. And as we see in this story, the tricks don't work well for them. It doesn't work out for them. But the text, however, gives us this different problem here. No sooner has Jesus talked about love being everything, being central to everything, the very foundation of our faith and the law itself, but then he speaks of great violence and oppression. Jesus gives these aggressors another question, right? One that isn't any easier for them to answer than the ones they have just thrown at him. What do you think of the Messiah? Whose son is he? Now, I'm not going to pretend that I know the mind of Jesus on this one, because I don't. But I know what he expects to hear in response to this question. He's saying, tell me about the Messiah. Now, whenever we hear, when we hear this and we hear those first words, son of, I know what we fill that in with, right? We all say God, son of God. But of course they would say David. The Messiah would come from David's line. It's normal. That was the expectation, right? This is the same reason why Matthew traces Jesus' lineage to David at the very beginning of this gospel story, right? Because the lineage is important, coming from David. So this isn't a trick question in that David is the wrong answer. But it's a play on the other expectation that the Messiah would be a warrior king, kind of like David. And these two terms, Messiah and Lord, are military terms, conquering and ruling. How could the king of Judah call his son conqueror of all, which would include him? How could David, being made king of Judah by God, accept that arrangement? He wouldn't. Then it gets worse. Jesus quotes Psalm 110 about conquering enemies and making them his footstool. I'm sure the Pharisees love to hear that one. The psalm goes on. He doesn't quote it, but it keeps going after this and makes reference to the Lord being at God's right hand and shattering kings and filling nations with corpses. Right? Cheery stuff. Tell me again where the love comes in with this one, because I can't find it. Now, I'm pretty sure that the author has intentionally put these side by side, right? Love everybody and Lord smash. Intellectually, right, if we go with our brains to this, I think it has to do with all these questions about who Jesus is supposed to be and what kind of box these leaders are trying to put Jesus into, right? How they're trying to classify him. Is he a crackpot or a revolutionary or a heretic? Right? Which one is he? Right? And can he be intimidated, debated, or defeated? Where do you stand, Jesus? They have been asking about what he's made of. But Jesus' question isn't so much about what these leaders think Jesus is made of, but what it is they expect to come from the incarnate one. What the incarnate one is made of. Will he be like David? And the picture he gives for that is frightening, right? Shattering heads. Well, if they think of David and kings and lords, right? What if they go there? What if they thought of something else than that? What if they thought instead of what Jesus had just said seconds earlier? Not of shattering our enemies and using them as footstools, but that the Messiah would be a different kind of leader for the people, calling them to wage acts of love and reconciliation rather than war and terror. What if their minds went to the law, the true heart of the law, love God, love neighbor, rather than defeating enemies? Would they see that Jesus has already painted a different portrait? That his ministry showed a completely different approach all along. That standing before them was the very new look Messiah he proclaimed. Now, he didn't ride into Jerusalem on a war horse like Pilate did just the day before. He came on a donkey, remember? You expect the Messiah to overthrow the leadership in a bloody coup d'etat, but Jesus offers a different kind of revolution and transformation of the world. And we should get that. When Jesus starts sounding a lot like a general, we should be clued into the fact that he is revealing our own motives to us, like he reveals the Pharisees' motives to the Pharisees and the people. And he does the same for Peter. Remember, when Peter calls him Messiah, it is only moments later that Jesus calls him Satan. We struggle with the great commandment because, well, as long as it is anything abstract, love everybody, it goes pretty easily for us. But when it's not abstract and out there, it starts to get hard, doesn't it? Can any of us honestly turn to the person next to us and say, I love the members of ISIS as I love myself? But when we say, I can't, right? I cannot. We are no different than the Pharisees to Jesus. And I'm no better than that. I think this is why these pieces are ultimately tied together. Because our loving God, right? Not just our love for God, but the love we give to God and share with God, right? And the love we give to our neighbors, right? It's all one thing. It's all one. Right? And we know this. We know that we're not loving God when we are condemning our neighbor. We get that. Elsewhere, Jesus says that whenever we ignore the homeless or the needy, we're ignoring him. Right? Each act of love is intertwined between God and our neighbors every time. Every time we love God, we're loving our neighbor. Every time we're loving our neighbor, we're loving God. So then this shift to the Messiah reveals how we think God incarnates into the world. How God comes here and what God comes to do. Now, many of our ancestors and many of our neighbors today see God as not loving our neighbors, but killing our neighbors for us. Right? But that's not how God did incarnate in Jesus. That was not Jesus in the flesh. Jesus didn't tell us to love, then went and shattered kings. Jesus loved everybody. At convention this weekend, we learned about holy currencies, which I really think could be a good thing for us. It's not a sexy title at all, but it's a good idea because it speaks of giving in a variety of ways. But it's not just about the giving. It's more about honor and respect and love for each other and for God. How we're able to give in many ways. How we are able to receive others' gifts in a variety of ways. And it boils down to love. We challenge next year's convention planners to adopt a model for our diocesan convention that did not simply open with a perfunctory prayer, but involved prayer and Bible study in the work and the decision making, so that we might be more open to what the Spirit is leading us toward. And we were challenged by convention to engage in interfaith dialogue in our local communities, that we might better know and understand our neighbors, that ultimately we might love them. Now, I like to remind myself and my friends that Jesus is never said that this work is easy. Nor did he say, just try as hard as you can. Just give it a good shot. Instead, he shows us what love looks like, what it feels like, what it means to do the love. And he expects us to put that first, that is the center of what we do. Right? Not revenge or fear or animosity, the things that often direct our actions, but to love people. Because how we deal with conflict, from Sudan or the Middle East to our siblings and our next door neighbors, can only go in a godly direction when we begin with love, when we start at love. respecting their dignity as a human being, that's the only way the door will open. And that's the only way we'll find the real solutions to any of our problems. And not just because it's doing our way, but that's God's way.